Hey guys, we're the Hard Time Strongman podcast, cheering up a bear class of man. And today we have a special episode just for you guys. Something that we've been working on. I mean, what, in the background, absentmindedly here and there, intermittently?
For a while now, yeah.
For a good long while. We're talking about our Hard Time Strongman book club, our library episode where we scoured our homes and cars and garages for a lot of the books that we've read over the years. And I mean, I don't know, man. We just think that people would find interesting, find useful. I feel like just the idea of having your own personal library is something that a lot of people need to consider. Just, you know, in general. And
yeah,
you know, as I've grown, as my family's grown, it's kind of taking on a, I don't know, a weight for me. Like, it's, it's become more of a priority thinking, you know, that as we go just in our lifetimes, you know, imagining, just thinking about all the changes that we've had culturally, you know, regarding learning and books and libraries and everything, you know, because I remember spending a lot of time as a kid in libraries just to get books, get information. I remember we had a literal bibliography set in my house, like on a bookshelf that we would reference. And more and more you see, you know, everything be digital now. You know, not just digital books, but audiobooks, you know, obviously videos, just all sorts of stuff. So with that, obviously you have the huge increase of just information people can share, which is amazing. I mean, you know, I talked to you the other day, I refound my old Kindle, which can hold, you know, God knows how many books. And I just rediscovered a bunch of these series that I had read. They're just sitting there. It's like, oh, holy crap. Like,
yeah,
just had no idea. It hasn't been charged for years now. But thinking, you know, it just kind of put me off. It's like, man, if my, you know, 2-year-old throws this wrong, you know, all those books, you know, can be gone from that device. You know, obviously it's on, you know, in whatever server that Amazon has, but
right,
it's, you know, ephemeral. It's not real. But, you know, I can go to a library, like our local library had I don't know if they were just liquidating a section or if they were just aging stuff out, but they had an entire patio filled with boxes of just free books for people to take. And told my wife, hey, we're going to be here a while, and just went through and grabbed just all sorts of reference materials on, you know, diet and nutrition, vitamins, on, you know, do yourself home building, on different tasks. And it's just kind of renewed that sense of urgency for me. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you, though, man. Like, I love my Kindle. It got me through Afghanistan, but I remember when I couldn't charge it. And then that thing can only hold a charge for so long. So, I mean, power goes out. What are you going to do? I'm definitely with you.
Absolutely.
Hard copy, in my opinion, is the way to go. Plus, how awesome is it when you walk into a house and you just see shelf upon shelf upon shelf upon shelf upon shelf of just books?
Just like,
you may not even be interested in what, like, that book is about, but it's still just like seeing just all those books is just awesome.
Well, it's what's that library that they always use in movies? Like, they used it in the John Wick series, I think the third installment. They used it in, gosh, I don't remember, but it's just this gorgeous, it's almost like a cathedral kind of library. And it's just got that, yeah, you know, I think they used it in Da Vinci Code or something, but, you know, just gorgeous library. And, you know, yeah, I feel like it's just a really root, I guess, human experience, just that, you know, our experiences, our, you know, our experiences can be transferred, can be shared, you know, because when you go into a library, when you see, you know, our house and you see all those gorgeous books, it's like, oh my gosh, like, that's knowledge that's not lost. you know, I can learn something. And, you know, you show me somebody's bookshelf and I'll show you what they've invested their time into and what they prioritize. Right. And, you know, like you said, don't get me wrong. I love my Kindle. I love that thing. You know, if it's in the cargo pocket of my scrubs, I can, you know, who knows how many books I can have on there. And it's a really amazing tool. It's one of those things that it just feels like magic to me still. That's like, I can just open this up and I can just flip. I can have an entire book just at my fingertips. And it weighs nothing. It's so small. It can fit anywhere. But, you know, my thing with audiobooks, my thing with, you know, digital like PDF books is, as much as I love them, because I listen to audiobooks all the time on my drive, because I have a drive to and from work that's an hour. So I just plug away at books and I read, you know, a whole bunch of books on my drive. But if I'm really interested in a subject or in a book, I have to have it in my hands. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a little bit of extra investment, but if I actually like a series or if I have a book that I need for like reference, if it's like a educational type of, I have to have my hands. I can't take it in, you know, just by hearing it. And even if I have it on like my Kindle, I need to be able to reference it better than flipping through, you know, 50 pages on, you know, this little Kindle or, you know, whatever. It's, I feel like if you can do that, if you can, you know, have the ease of use with the audiobook or with the Kindle, you know, plus having a hard copy at home, that's the way to go. But just audiobooks, just, you know, digital books, you know, anything digital can be edited or erased.
Right.
After the fact, you don't ever really own anything unless you're completely disconnected from the internet, in which case get a freaking book anyways. You know, it's, you know, it's just, they fit a really nice niche, but like audiobooks, for instance, like I said, you can't cross-reference it on the fly. Like, oh man, what was that part? And it's like, you know, at least I haven't found a way to. Good luck.
Right.
But at least for my purposes and my experience, you know, physical books are king. Because especially, like you said, just imagine like walking into your office and just having rows of books. You know, that's just such a calming thing. And then, you know, especially like a legacy thing, right? So teaching people, like passing it out to your children so they can have that knowledge, you know, that it doesn't just, you know, you can't just poof and go away. You know, it's there, it's real.
Yeah, the only way you can get rid of them is by, you know, pulling a 1930s Nazi Germany and burning them. That's all you can do.
And isn't it crazy that's so infamous?
Yeah.
Of all the things, right? Everything else was infamous too, all the nasty crap they did. But dude, you burned books.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's so real for so many people. But also, you know, like we talked about, like passing on information, I feel like it's a community practice too.
No, it truly is, because, I mean, for centuries, the only way, well, one of the only ways of passing down information like that is through written history, you know, because over time, people could forget. They can die. And then that knowledge is just lost forever.
Yeah. Well, and it's so writing, scary too.
Right.
So scary too. Like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, because, you know, so writing things down, carving them into walls, carving them into obelisks, it's they're ways of making sure that information, that history gets passed down until it's destroyed.
Well, and passed down correctly, you know, because they had verbal histories for a long, long time.
Yes. Right?
But, you know, like you said, carving into a wall, you know, printing it on paper, you know, it's a better means of making sure that something doesn't get, you know, erased or altered. You know, and it's really crazy to think, scary to think, really, when you think of just our memories, like what a human being could potentially remember, like after a lifetime. Like, think about all the skills that you've learned up to this point, all the little tidbits of knowledge and information, all the conversations you can recall, everything. right? And then it's your job to pass that on to the next generation, and you forgot half of it.
I was going to say
it was important, or it's even scarier, you die.
Yeah, it's even scarier to think of all the things that I've just forgotten.
Yeah.
Just think about it. Like, our skills that we've learned are very perishable if we don't use them.
Yeah.
Like, that knowledge is very, very perishable.
Yeah. Well, think about, like you said, not even just like passing down, like telling your kids or your grandkids, but actually going through and teaching them, hands on. Like we talked about in our homesteading episode a while ago, like think about like two generations ago, where all the stuff that we're chasing now was the norm. Mm-hmm. It's just what you did.
Right.
It's like, oh no, let's move to the city. Let's forget about all this crap. And then we freaking did. So people are having to rediscover all this stuff. It's like, crap, man. Like, that would have been really nice if we didn't forget that.
Yeah, you're right.
Yes, there are books, but I feel like books are an alternative. It's an extension of what the job you're supposed to be doing with people.
And there's a lot of people who only learn by hands-on instruction, by actually doing practical exercises. That's the only way they can learn.
Right. Connect learners.
Yep.
Yeah. So, with all that being said, audiobooks are great. Kindles are great, but they aren't reliable. This isn't something that can, I feel like, securely be a legacy. So this episode, guys, is just dedicated to a bunch of book recommendations by us, by Hard Time Strong Men, that we think that you should have not only on your shelves, but in your book clubs at home. Build that community.
Oh, yeah.
But, these are things that, have touched us or we think are important for some reason or another. And we want to share it with you to hopefully spread that out.
Yeah.
You want to get into it?
All right, sure. Yeah, let's hit nonfiction first. I'm a big history buff. I love history, particularly World War II. World War II history to me has been, it's like a little comfort thing. So I look back on it and that was the age where technology was kind of coming into its own, but we were still heavily reliant on the human portion of it. We went into war and we didn't go in with body armor or anything like that. The best bit of armor we had there was the helmet. That's as good as she got back then. We didn't
have, like, men.
Yeah, we didn't have ballistic vests. We were guns and freaking helmets. Let's go.
Like, we're rocking a freaking Alice belt kit. Let's get after it right now.
Let's get done. So with that in mind, you will see quite a bit of my recommendations, especially in nonfiction, being focused on history. So for me, my first recommendation is a book called Rogue Heroes. It's written by Ben McIntyre. It's the history of the SAS. And it's all about when they were really first organized. It's about their secret special forces unit that sabotaged the Nazis and changed the nature of war. So that's a great one to read.
Who dares wins.
Yes, who dares wins.
The SAS are freaking savages.
Oh my God, yes.
God, I love watching them work. Or just reading about them work. The guys are freaking...
Oh yeah.
Like, just sharp. Like, razor sharp. It's sick.
Yeah. Yeah, my next recommendation is a book called... It's a very small book. In stature. It's called On Tyranny. 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. It's written by Timothy Snyder. It's all about, the lessons that the founding fathers tried to teach us based on what they knew and what they kind of thought was coming. And it's very much still prevalent, still relevant. That's what I was trying to think of. Still relevant to this day.
I just say tyranny will always be with us.
Mm-hmm.
Good to have lessons on that.
Yeah, the biggest lesson for tyranny is the only way to get rid of tyranny is to kill it.
Brew it out.
Literally kill it.
With wood chippers.
Yep, and lead. So I see you got Swamp Fox on there. So yeah. My next recommendation is a book called War on the Run. It's the epic story of Robert Rogers and the conquest of America's first frontier. Written Rogers by John Rangers. F. Ross. Yes, Rogers Rangers. Talk about savage.
Golly, dude. Monster.
Yeah. So my next recommendation, this is one that I hold near and dear to my heart because I reference this constantly. This book is called The U.S. Constitution and Other Key American Writings.
I just heard an eagle call in the background. That was weird.
Right. Right. It even has the Federalist Papers in it. Like,
bro, this like is leather bound. That's yes, legit.
Leather bound.
And who's that by?
Various authors.
So you have to add that to the show notes so we can throw that out on the Patreon. We need to start we need to see if we can ever get that Amazon recommendations thing set up.
Oh, again. Yes.
Because we can throw all these on there so y'all could find. That'd be cool.
Oh, heck yes. Oh, my God. Yeah, there's so much on here. The Homestead Act, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address.
Oh, hey, dude. Do you have Chip Gaines on your list?
I do, actually. Yes. So I have two of, thanks to my wife, I have two of Chip Gaines's books. The first is called Capital Gains, and the second is called No Pain, No Gains. And there's a lot of good lessons on here. As much of a goofball as Chip Gaines is, it's really interesting to see and read through like just his experiences with coming into his own. Because, you know, I mean, the best way, I've always said that the best way to learn a lesson is to make a mistake. And Lord knows this dude has, yes, you will learn as many ways to do something wrong as it is to do something right. So it's very interesting to read all the times that he's done something wrong and how he has learned from it and capitalized on it. And my last recommendation is one of the books that I read in Afghanistan. It's called The Lions of Kandahar, written by Kevin Maurer and Rusty Bradley.
What was that one about?
So that one was about, I believe, the Navy SEALs fighting it out Kandahar with the Taliban. Let me double check on that, though. Ah, so that's what it was. So it wasn't SEALs. Ooh, man. One of those days for me. So it was a story about a Army Special Forces commander and just his point of view from multiple deployments to the theater and kind of the stuff that they went through to try to reclaim the Kandahar province.
What a mess.
Dude, yeah. That Afghanistan and this. There will never be stories of how messed up Afghanistan was.
Well, they'll always make more.
Always be new accounts coming out. See, I still, one of the books I didn't put on there was about that base up in Nuristan that got completely freaking overrun. I mean, there were multiple books about that. Red Platoon, I think, was one of them. Anyway, the base was called Camp Keating. And it was messed up. Basically, the base was at the bottom of a valley between three mountains, with a river basically splitting the base from the landing zone for the helicopters. Dude, it was whoever in their, I guess, wrong mind decided to put a base there, it should be shot.
I was going to say, yeah, there's no right mind about that.
It's insanity.
So I don't have a lot in this one. I just don't remember all of them. Like, that's my problem. Because when I was in high school, I was really into World War II history. So I read a bunch of autobiographies. So, like Colonel Bud Day. There was one on another kid that was in Vietnam. Just like a bunch of autobiographies, war accounts that, really helped shape that, mindset for me of all these dudes. Along with, I don't know, like a lot of these genres like run together for me. So like nonfiction, educational, like all of our like soldiering, like all the skills based ones, it all kind of rolls together. But one of my big ones, The Swamp Fox, How Francis Marion Saved the American Revolution by John Oller. Holy crap.
Yeah.
This dude was a freaking psycho. Like, what a monster. There was literally an account of, I might be butchering the story, so don't light me up in the comments, but where they had this social function, like a party. He didn't want to be, he didn't like parties. So he jumped out the window, injured his leg, and was hobbling away when they got all of them got detained by the enemy. And he's just like, oh crap. He had to get out of there. But the way that this guy conducted his people, because at that time, people would switch sides 2, 3, 5 times, depending on who was winning. So he'd have deserters all the time. So he would start the weekend off with 500 men and go to battle with 300. Just crazy stuff. And he almost never, met them force on force just because of how he had to fight. But he was such a bane in their size. They're like, yeah, we can't go this way. It's not worth it. It's just he had so many different commanders that were put in place just to root him out, and they failed. And just the way that he handled not only his people, but the enemy too. So people who were deserted, they weren't tortured. They weren't, they didn't have their homes ransacked or anything. And that earned him respect and a bunch of alliances by just being a good human and commander. So pretty cool. And then Ordinary Men. Full title is Ordinary Men, Reserve Police Battalion 101 and the Final Solution in Poland. I don't know if the words Final Solution and Poland have a good ring to it. But it's about a reserve battalion. So not the normal guys, a reserve battalion, a bunch of middle-aged dudes, and how they just turn into cold-blooded murderers because people told them to.
Jesus.
Literally tens of thousands of Jews. So these guys' jobs were literally they would roll up and they would liquidate a town.
I was gonna say the liquidators, yeah.
But these weren't the fanatics. They weren't, these dudes weren't SS. These dudes weren't hardcore. They were just bunch of middle-aged dudes. And it's just a breakdown of the psychology of, someone in authority told you to do this thing, and you conformed with the rest of your buddies. And that conformity was you literally laying people down in a ditch, putting your barrel at the base of your neck so you didn't flinch, and pulling the trigger. And just doing that all day. That was a tough read. That was a tough read,
man.
It did not do me good, but
no,
yeah, just the, but it really helped just the idea of authority and herd mentality, you know, and we talked about that. I don't even remember what episode, but we talked about like the prison experiment. We talked about the shock experiment, and dude, it's just scary what authority can do to people.
Oh,
but
yeah, it is. It's crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, great reference for that. If y'all want to look that up, by Christopher Browning, Ordinary Men, but yeah, Reserve Police Battalion 101, just ordinary dudes had, could have been you, could have been me, could have been anybody, but just the right factors were in place, and yeah, horrible atrocity. But
I just remembered another one that
So
I first discovered this book back when I was at an airport and I had forgotten to bring along a book, so I stopped off in the airport bookstore there and just started looking through, and I found this one. It was called Marine Sniper 93 Confirmed Kills. It was the story of probably one of the most notorious Marine snipers ever, Carlos Hathcock.
I read a book on him too. Yeah.
He was a bad mother.
He was good.
Yes.
He was good. Bad good. Like, oh.
For those of you that are like, can't really like piece together like what we're talking about, if you've ever seen things referenced where like a sniper shoots through another sniper's scope and kills them. Yeah,
that was him.
Carlos Hathcock did that in Vietnam. He shot.
I read that. I'm looking at this. I read that same book, Marine Sniper, 93 Confirmed Kills. Yeah.
Yes.
He wore a white feather in his boonie cap.
He was,
which, by the way, does not look like Vietnam, the white feather.
No.
So, and he had such respect from the guys in his unit that they all started wearing white feathers in their cap to try to throw off, because the enemy literally put out like snipers just to kill him. That was their only mission. Just to kill this guy. And he so that was one of the things, like, he talked about that shot where he shot a guy through the glass, and he said, or you know, whoever was interviewing for the autobiography, but it's like, yeah, that might seem impressive, except for you realize that to be able to make that shot, he had to be looking right at him when he shot. And it's like, oh dude, but this guy was nuts. So he would So before he got terribly burned, because there was there was an attack or a crash or something, and their troop carrier burned up, and so he like was in there throwing dudes out, and he got just terribly burned. But before that, while he was still operational, the dude would literally come in from on mission, refit, grab a cracker, and then go out with the next guys going out. Like, would not rest. Mission after mission after mission. He was just the absolute monster.
I think he was one of the original ones that outfitted a
ghillie suit.
An optic on the M2.
I remember that story too. Yeah.
And he was just raining hell on people with this thing. And he actually shot a guy. It's like it was over a mile.
Yeah.
And where he hit them, like the lieutenant or whatever that was sitting there told him he missed. He's like, nah, they usually flop around like that when you hit them in the head. And sure enough, that dude was flopping around like a fish out of water. And he had shot him square in the, I think it was like the neck, basically decapitated the dude.
What a monster.
Oh.
Yeah. Great. Also a great book.
Yes. I've read that book great so story. Many times.
Great story. Dude, just snipers in general. The mentality, all the accounts that you can read on them, like from their point of view or like all biographies, it's just like, it's a certain type of guy, just a certain type of dude. And it's like, yeah, I do not want anything bad to do with you. Like, it's something else.
Yeah. Like Chris Kyle.
Literally hunting men. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
It is a different mindset.
Something I don't have on here, but I didn't read it personally, but it was referenced in a lot of documentaries I read, but on the Ghost in the Darkness. The two lions,
yeah.
That's just a scary, anytime you read any of that, it's just terrifying reading firsthand accounts.
Like, what the crap, dude?
Screw that. Screw everything about that.
Yeah.
Let's move into fiction.
Yeah, let's do fiction. All right. So this is where it gets fun. I mean, I just started listing off everything that I had. Rainbow Six, The Hunt for Red October.
Anything by Tom Clancy. Too long.
Anything Tom Clancy is fantastic and worth a read.
I remember you got me to read Rainbow Six, I think while we were on deployment. I think when we were in Bagram. And that impacted me in a fundamental way. Just reading that whole thing, I was like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Because I could see this happening.
Right. It was like, totally possible.
Talking about the park I was imagining, like Disney World or Disneyland, like all the stuff. And then especially thinking about it through the lens of like the whole COVID nonsense, I'm just like,
right.
Oh, that's great.
Like, yeah. Basically, they were distributing a biological agent through a misting system at the Olympics in Sydney. But
it had transmission through droplets, through sex, through person-to-person contact, through it made everybody a vector. So meaning if you touch something, it would stay on there, like nasty bug.
Yeah,
but yeah, horrible. But man, anything by Tom Clancy, I love the detail that he goes into. That's what gets me.
And it's accurate, like, too. That's the crazy part.
Yeah. And what I don't remember what it was, but it was. Was it Without Remorse? I think is what it was. That was another really great book. Really great.
Yeah, they made it into a movie, too. It wasn't bad.
No, the book was excellent, though.
Yeah, I think I actually have that book somewhere in storage.
What's A Gentleman in Moscow?
So, A Gentleman in Moscow, let me pull it out here. So, A Gentleman in Moscow, that takes place right around the turn of when I hate that I'm blanking on this crap right now. So I think it took place. Okay, so Moscow right around like 1922. So that should have been right around the whole like communism taking over thing. So like the Tsar and his family getting like ousted.
Nice.
And like Lenin, I think Lenin and like his followers coming in. And it's basically just like one of the final aristocrats. Basically, he was confined to the top floor of a hotel, and like all of his assets were seized, and he was told that if he ever leaves that hotel, he will be shot on sight.
Nice.
By the communists. So it's a very, very interesting look into like his world, basically being confined to this like lavish hotel. So it's his room is not really lavish. He basically gets like, I wouldn't call them slave quarters, but like like butler quarters.
Okay.
Like staff kind of secondary quarters up in the, I guess the attic, you would say. It's very sparse. There's nothing like luxurious about it. So it's very interesting to read back on that time in Moscow too. Cause it's like, where did it all go wrong? Well, it's like, well, it started here.
Well, funny you should ask.
Yeah.
Here you are.
Yeah. Moscow, 1922. Hmm. Welcome to the...
Welcome to the Thunderdome.
Yeah, Thunderdome. It's a good one. All right, what do you got?
I've got, and this is actually a really recent one for me, The Dune Saga mm-hmm. by Frank Herbert.
Yeah.
I see you
have a series on here, which is probably one of my favorites.
Yes. But Dune Saga, that's just a trippy sci-fi, like, I could say masterpiece, because it's been around long enough and enough people like it. It is true, very trippy. A lot of just like philosophy regarding like time and yeah, a lot big picture stuff. Really cool.
I haven't read it. I've seen the first movie, but I really want to read the books, because I've heard they're I've heard they're fantastic.
You should. You'd have fun. I'm once again another book that I need to get on paperback just physically, but right now I'm listening to all the audiobooks, and a lot of fun. Really great production value. And the Lightbringer series by Brent Weeks. Holy
fantastic.
Crap.
Fantastic.
Excellent, excellent series. And what gets me, because I've never really been into, like, obviously when I was a kid, I read like the Harry Potter series and everything, but like I never, like, as an adult was into like magic or fantasy or any of those kinds of books. What gets me about the Lightbringer series is the magic system is a system. And it has rules.
Yes.
And it all fits together. And like, you can't break the rules without a really good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, just what he does with, like, just explaining like the book lore science behind the magic and how it can be expressed and used and everything. It's just so good. And the characters are just really strongly written. I love smart characters because it makes me feel smart when I read it. And he has really, really clever characters. And that's just super. Yeah. Like the Dune series, the phrase guy likes to use, Franker likes to use is, you know, plans within plans, schemes within schemes, wheels within wheels. Just like there are layers to this with these kinds of characters. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun. Right now, I finally started listening to the last book in the series, and it's, once again, does not disappoint.
So, for those of you who haven't read it, basically, think Harry Potter, but you don't need wands. And all the magic is based off of colors.
It's based off of light.
It's based off of light and the entire spectrum. So basically, if you're like, say, I don't even know what they call them anymore, but I just call them wizards. So it's a drafter. Thank you. So if you're a drafter who can draft, say, blue or green, if you can see that color anywhere in the world, based off the purity of that color, is how strong you can craft whatever your mind can think of. And the crazy part is those colors also have a physical effect on you. It can change your mood.
I was going to say there's an emotional effect from the color. So blue is analytical. So detached, it lowers your just like emotional. I don't know. It just flattens you out, I guess. You become more analytical. Green is like wild. It's life. So you become, you know, just really hyped up. Not hyperactive, but just like kind of bouncy, like you lose your inhibitions a little bit. But what gets me is that so in drafting, red's like anger or passion. But the great thing about it is that these all have different qualities. So so blue is hard but brittle. Red is
it can
be hard, but it's also kind of spongy. Or yellow is super hard, and I don't know, but like the entire spectrum, like you said. But what gets me is that the way the light system works, so like you can't just look at a white light and, you know, draft your color, because you are not a light prism, so you have to see that color. So you can either have like tinted glasses that you carry on your person if you're able to draft. You can flip those on really quick, but obviously it's less you're able to draft less. It's a worse quality than if you see the actual color. Or guys will just carry around freaking magnesium strips.
Yeah, like color flares.
Yeah, flares if they need it. Which is awesome, right? Because you're mixing technology with this magic system, but also the way that you draft it, so you see it, right? But then you create this substance, I think it's called Linux, I think is what it's called. But you create in your body. So you're able to process light through your eyes, you create in your body, but then it has to be expelled somehow.
So that's right, because they can store it. They can store it in their bodies.
You can draft it underneath your fingernails, and it comes out, and guys will make like spears or swords or whatever, or brass knuckle. And like you said, anything that you can create within the rules of your color. Or if it needs to come out through your skin, you're going to have like an abrasion there where it breaks your skin by coming out.
Yeah.
Like it's such a cool freaking, such a cool system.
So one of my favorite parts of that is that unlike like Harry Potter, where you can just keep casting spells and stuff, there's a limit. The more you use your color, it starts showing up in the iris of your eyes. And once it fills up and goes past the limits of the iris,
it breaks the halo.
It goes breaks into the your
sclera.
Yep. And you become what they call a white. Right? I think it's called a white.
A color white.
W-I-G-H-T. You basically become just this feral version of your color. You're just crazy. There's no controlling the emotion of that color.
Mm-hmm. And once again, you become super strong because you don't have to worry about usage anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're just blasting your color everywhere. You don't care about, you know, anything. So there's like a whole religious system. There's like the world building is insane.
It is very insane. Well thought out. I didn't think I was gonna like it, to be honest with you. And then I like read the first book, and I was like, oh, this is good.
Oh, it immediately dropped me, and I was like, whoa, this guy actually thought this out.
Yeah.
Like, that's very crazy.
Very, very well thought out and very well written book. The character development is also fantastic.
Oh, top notch. Yeah.
Highly recommend him. If you're into like
1,000%.
Fantasy and magic stuff like that, just highly recommended.
And then we move over to cautionary tales, because that's a fun category to have.
Yeah. So cautionary tales. My first one is has actually evolved into the world we are living now. The book is called 1984 by George Orwell. It was originally written as a cautionary tale, and it is.
I don't like it.
It's the world we're living in now.
Oh, read that, please. It's not hard. It's not a long read, but it is such a gut puncher. Like, oh, it's so tough. Talking about a surveillance state.
Mm-hmm.
And it is miserable.
So many parallels to this world.
so many parallels to the world, and you'll be reading this like, oh wait, and that's the design. That's what it's supposed to do, because it's not great, and what we're doing right now is not great.
No. So the next one. I did because I've been reading the first book and it's really good and also really plausible. So this is the 1 Second After series by William R. Forston. It's basically us, some enemies of the United States go in. We've talked about this in our EMP and After episode. So enemies of the United States detonate, I think, 3 EMPs high up in the atmosphere and fry everything connected to the grid. And it's a very interesting look at the way society will devolve into basically clans. And it's a very hard look at the struggles the average person will face and the decisions they'll have to make regarding their own family, themselves, their pets, their neighbors, and total strangers.
Well, like you said, it's the breakdown of the universal, like, hyper connected world that we live in right now. So going back to you're not connected to even the next town over, unless you talk to somebody face to face, what does that look like?
Right.
And yeah, you go back to your immediate community and just seeing what happens, if that's strong, if that's weak, and how that works with other people. And just shows how weak we are as a society currently. And this was, what is this set in? In like the 80s or the 90s? I think the guy's a flip phone.
So it had to have been 90s, early 2000s.
Like 90s, early 2000. But it was like, it was still like a more 80s mindset. So I think it was like mid 90s is probably when it takes place. Because the mindset was older, how the guy was writing it, the point of view and everything.
Yeah.
But it was, super harsh. Like, not a feel-good book. Because pretty much the entire book is people trying to not starve to death. Is the book.
Yeah.
Like, one of my favorite characters in the book, and he's not there for too long, is the town doctor. This is an old dude, been dark bed, he delivered everyone's kids. They grew up and then he delivered their kids, like, been there forever. And like, he's in the immediate like council for the mayor or whoever, the council that's setting up the trying to keep everybody together. And he's like, hey, by the way, we have about a month until all my liver, kidney, and heart patients are going to die. So we need to be prepared to bury them. And like, they all look at me. He's like, yeah, I don't have medication. I have no way to get their medication. So what they have is what they have, and they're going to be gone. Like, and you can expect this, this, and this. If we can't get clean water, you can expect this to kill people off. Like, just, it gives just such a harsh look of like all the privileges and all the, just the cush life we've had medically, with the healthcare that we have in developed countries now, with that suddenly being gone, it's like, oh yeah. Yeah, life is very different now.
Well, think about it. We don't have refrigeration at that point. Mm-hmm. You're lucky if you find ice. And even that's going to go away pretty quick.
Think about not having central heating and air.
Oh yeah.
Think about all the houses that don't have a fireplace.
Oof.
Oof. And winter hits. Actual, real winter.
Don't remind me. I don't have one of those down here in Florida.
That's what I'm saying, dude. Better have a jacket. Like, it's not great.
Well, like, luckily we don't really have to worry about it being cold.
But thank God that I was insistent on my wife finding a place when we moved down here that had a fireplace.
Oh, yes.
Because that's the only way we were able to keep warm during the freeze.
Yeah, that was.
Literally outside, it was like 7 degrees. Like as a quick way to figure out where you're deficient is by losing power.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, excellent book. Scared the crap out of me. Recommend it to everybody. Please read it. We already talked about it, but Ordinary Men. You are not infallible, and believing that anyone else is foolish. And thinking that you're better than other people is foolish. Like, because just like, especially looking back at the past and oh, nobody would do, we wouldn't do that. You're wrong. Because you would.
Yeah,
Yeah, you would. Your
100%.
neighbor would. You have to think about all these things, man. Yeah, scary stuff. And then this
This
one's more
one,
like, this is more lighthearted.
I have. So I'm glad you threw this on here.
It is more lighthearted, but I love these little pocket guides because it's just those, and this is in no way a substitute for having actual firsthand knowledge on these tasks and skills, but just having kind of an overview, a broad overview of these things, so you can pull back, from your mental library later is really useful, I think. But the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook by Joshua, what was it? Joshua Piven and David Borgenicht. And it is more lighthearted. It's more funny than anything. But it does have a lot of actually really solid information in there as I read through it. But so many things. How to ram a car, how to survive a car crash, how to fend off a pirate attack, how to identify a bomb, how to jump from one car to another, how to survive a drone attack, how to survive a tsunami, how to treat a frostbite, how to treat a leg fracture, how to survive when lost in the mountains, how to survive an avalanche, how to purify water. So an entire little book on all these little things, and it's like 1 to 2, how to survive nuclear fallout, 1 to 3 pages of just bite-size information. It's fun. Good way to get family into stuff.
Yes.
Because it's, if anything, it's solid tidbits of information, but it's conversation starters for one.
This podcast is sponsored by Blackbeard Firestarter. Blackbeard Firestarter has been our first choice in Firestarter since they introduced their Firestarter rope years ago.
Blackbeard offers their fire starters, their fire plugs, arc lighters, ferro rods, stormproof matches, everything you need to get a fire started.
Their products are made right here in the U.S., wind and waterproof, have an insane burn time. They're basically dummy proof.
And help you out, Blackbeard let us cherry pick from their store everything that we want, everything that we thought you needed to get a fire started, and we call it our Hard Time Strong Men Fire Kit. On top of that, they're also offering a 15% discount on anything in their store when you enter code STRONGMEN at checkout.
We can't recommend Blackbeard enough. They stand behind their products, and so do we.
Be sure to check them out at blackbeardfire.com and on Instagram at blackbeardfire. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.
And moving on to soldiering / guerrilla / militant type books.
Yeah, so now we're getting into like
also known as the good stuff.
The good stuff. That was a good segue going from like that kind of stuff into the more specific stuff. So yeah, getting into this. I stole this one from you, but it's one that I actually need to sit down and read.
Please
I have it. From what I've glanced at it, dude, it's a very good book. It's called Fry the Brain by John West. Such a good book.
Incredible.
Yeah. Full
the
title
Art
is
of Urban Sniping and Its Role in Modern Guerrilla Warfare.
Yeah.
AKA the type of book they would rather have burned. Like, it is.
The type of book the Trump shooter probably should have read.
The book they don't want you to have.
Yeah. Actually, the one he should have read was basic rifle marksmanship.
Ooh.
Seriously, 150 yards. How do you miss? How do you miss?
Don't tell the guy that was trying to assassinate the president they should have done better. It's not a good look. But just some chapter ideas. So sniper at work, fundamentals of urban guerrilla sniping, tools of the trade, guerrilla sniper craft, the sound of silence, terror in Texas, the troubles, the Chechen wolves, asymmetric sniper forensics, remote sniping. They literally have, as a case study, the JFK assassination.
Oh. Wait, the real one, or, you know, the one we've just been, you know, spoon-fed?
Let me find the picture, because it's the real one.
Oh, so I haven't read that one. Do they go through the scenario of the driver actually shooting him?
They don't, but they do go over sniper positions 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Along with signals A and B, command and control. There's a nice little graph here of, you know,
yeah,
all their locations.
The grassy, you know, they can, yeah.
No, I mean, like, all,
yeah,
of all the shooter's locations, because of the trajectory of, you know, the bullets that we found. I can't accentuate enough. This is plural. Great book. Love it.
Definitely worth a read.
Chapter 9. The Dealey plots of shooters. Snipers. Anyways. Yeah.
Anyway. And also, in no way, shape, or form am I condoning shooting a former U.S. president.
Thanks.
Just throwing that out there so we don't get canceled.
This is not next being book. Canceled over.
Right. So the next on my list is... There really are, and it's coming. Next book on my list is The Ranger Handbook. As much as I do want to sit down and read it, do not want to become a statistic, so I'm going to have to like pick and choose and take a lot of time to read it, because otherwise I'm
so gonna... We need to actually finish our Ranger Handbook Abridged series.
That is
a stain on our record.
Exactly what I was getting at. And basically any TM. I was really referencing improvised munitions, but you had a point, and basically any TM I really need to reread.
Most any TM. I mean, so Sniper Training, Ranger Handbook, First Aid, Fieldcraft. Is there? There's not a Fieldcraft one. There's like individual ones, like for survival. That's the one I was thinking of. Land Nav. Tactical Mission Graphics, Command Signal. There's so many. Yeah. All the weapon systems. Infantry platoon squad. Attack.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many. But a lot of great information in there.
Yeah.
I also don't have the Phantom Soldier. I didn't write that down in the show notes, so that's a really good one. More guerrilla typey stuff. But I have, which I just finished recently, The War of the Flea, the classic study of guerrilla warfare by Robert Tabor. Excellent book. That one's really good too. And as the name suggests, is literally just historical studies on guerrilla warfare. The whys, what worked, what didn't work, why did this fail, why did this succeed, and like where we're going from. And granted, this was written, I think, in like the 60s, but why the U.S. is going to fail in any attempt to root out insurgency, and basically why if an insurgency continues, like, with the will of the people, it will not fail. Like, guerrilla warfare cannot fail if you have the will of the people. Great, recent example is Afghanistan. Because you are not fighting a sect, you are fighting a people.
You're fighting an idea.
An ideology. And they're fighting for way more than you are. Is a absolutely, absolutely excellent book. Highly recommend anybody read that one. I also had Fry the Brain. I read on digits already, but I want to reread it on paperback, which I have. So I'm going to start reading that tomorrow as part of my quiet times. But great. I do love this book. There's, like, literally goes into different weapon systems.
Jeez.
And why they could be used. So, like, high caliber revolvers with scopes, shotguns, obviously the more, your more typical semi-automatic rifles, but just has case study after case study. Like, The Troubles was an excellent chapter on that. And just the idea. So Fry the Brain comes from, gosh, what was the conflict that came from? I forget, but whatever conflict it was essentially on opposite sides of this huge main city street, this main thoroughfare, where hotels on either side, and they would just sit there all day and snipe people. And it coined the term Fry the Brain just because of the constant stress of, you could not leave your home, you could not go to work, you could not get on a bus or in a taxi or in a car without the threat of having your freaking, head ventilated.
It was probably Chechnya.
I think it was. I don't fully remember, but yeah, and it's called Fry the Brain, because just that constant stress is just, it's too much. But yeah, just that idea of, as a guerrilla sniper, you could be anyone, anywhere, at any time, and then set up and do your thing and leave. And that stressor, that effect that it has on an organized force, on a not contemporary force, but a please starts with a
near
C.
Peer?
Not near peer. You know what I mean? Like a typical.
Yeah.
Typical army or police force, right? It's too much. Like, in The Troubles, they just stopped. Like, they literally, it got to the point with the IRA that they stopped, the guards at the checkpoint stopped going out of their guard post.
If I lived there.
But the thing, like, every time that they ventured out, they got shot in the freaking stomach. Because they were wearing plates.
Oh, God.
And literally, like, they would post up a sign that says sniper at work. Just in a field or in a forest where they would go patrolling. And it happened enough to where they put a sign out. They didn't go there. Because it's not worth it.
Psychological warfare.
Like, it is such a potent weapon. But yeah. Cool book. Liked it a lot. 10 out of 10. The Art of War by Sun Tzu. A lot of people take this as gospel. I take it as, just a good point of view. It's a good book.
I mean, a lot of his philosophies are still valid to this day.
Absolutely. And then, this could be any, Yeah, and this is so hard because this is so, like, there are so many books that you should read to get better at your job or to learn new skills. Like, a good example, pretty much any pocket guide to knots. I have the Pocket Guide to Prepper Knots by Patty Hahn. I used to have the Kelly's Book of Knots, which had like a couple hundred knots in there. Anything like that. So knots, marksmanship, gunsmithing, the Ranger Handbook obviously is the default starting point for a lot of this stuff, just because it has stood the test of time, is a solid resource. Right. Something that I recently picked up that I've been like mulling over for a long time, but you know, like HEB or Walmart, how they'll have those laminated little pamphlets or guides for your area. So I picked up one on snakes of Central Texas and Texas dangerous animals and plants, and literally has, you know, full color pictures of, you know, all these specimens, whether they're poisonous or venomous or whatever, where they're found, their habitat, their mannerisms, just little pocket stuff.
Handy.
Also, good idea to stick around with us, because as we are working on our book, we're also working on PDF guides. And a lot of these we're going to try to make into pocket guides that we can send to you guys out laminated, ready to rock. So, homesteading.
Dude, if you thought my nonfiction was long, if I could even remember...
I was going to say you have one thing on here.
If I could even remember or find all of my homesteading books, this would probably be... my little section would be an entire page, if not longer. But one of the best ones that I've read so far is called Self-Sufficiency for the 21st Century. It was written by Dick and James Strawbridge, so father and son. Dick Strawbridge was an officer in the British military. He was an engineer. This man is a freaking genius. I've seen him on TV. He and his wife moved to France and bought a dilapidated French chateau and have basically completely rebuilt it, redesigned everything around it, turned one of the outbuildings into like a modernized apartment for I think her parents on the grounds. Within the chateau, he installed an elevator system.
What?
Yeah. He literally installed an elevator system in there. He installed all new plumbing to make sure that hot water could run from not only the ground floor, but up to, I think, like the third or fourth floor. I can't remember how many floors are in this place. He revamped all the chimneys so that there was like actual like PVC or something running through all the chimneys to all the fireplaces, so that like there was no smoke leakage, no carbon monoxide leakage into the entire, it's amazing. It was one of my COVID, I guess, guilty pleasures was to watch this.
It was called
Escape to the Chateau or something.
Hmm.
Just really, really fun to just watch him do this and watch his wife like do the interior design for it and just kind of watch their two kids grow up at the same time. And they got to grow up in this chateau on this property. Like, he was a master at self-sufficiency, obviously. I don't even know why I'm saying was. He is. Like, they had an absolute working garden. They hosted weddings at this place. The fruit trees, dude, there is a laundry list of all the things that these people did to this place, and it's absolutely amazing. It's a homesteader's dream to see a lot of what they did to this place.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun on YouTube following this family that built their own A-frame. Like from
that's cool.
Like clearing the land to laying the foundation to everything pretty much on their own. It was really fun to see. Really fun to watch.
That book you showed me earlier in the pre-show about building a house basically from scratch.
Do it yourself house building. Once again, just another book that I found on, you know, in that, you know, that library in that free pile. But everything there, I have a book on home repairs. I have a book on, you know, like how to build a deck, patio, like all these different things. Kind of in homesteading, kind of in the Millicent task is Tactical Lockpicking by Pat Watson, which is just a fun book for one, learning how to lockpick, but also he has a lot of really great case studies in there with, you know, like full page pictures, the whole bit. Also, so he is owner of one of the owners of Uncensored Tactical, which is great resource. Yeah. But super cool dude, super cool resource. And that's the problem is that I don't have all the books that I've read. You know, like you said, I could make a whole document just on that. But you know, homesteading covers so much, you know, because that dips into FMs, that dips into you know, the nonfictions, so much. But
yeah, the vast majority of my stuff,
the woodworking, all that stuff.
Yeah. Tools. The vast majority of all my books are still packed away in boxes in the garage just because we don't have a place to put them right now. That's one of the things that's on my list of things to do this house is built in bookshelves, like straight up like Beauty and the Beast, the library with the freaking ladder.
Nice. Kind
of thing in one of our rooms, like just floor to ceiling kind of bookshelves.
I was gonna say in the office, my wife had me build a hip to ceiling bookshelf, the one of the ones that like winds around.
Mm-hmm.
And she filled the entire thing immediately.
Oh yeah.
Like I was worried the freaking wall's gonna come down with all the weight on there.
We probably could too here between my wife's medical books and her recreational books. She could probably fill that entire room on her own.
I was going to say, all the books that we currently have and all the books that I want, whenever we build our house, we're going to have to build a separate library study because it's just too much.
Yep.
Speaking of medical.
Arboretum. Yeah. Speaking of medical
books, your wife does not count as a bullet point. Listen, she's not a book.
Yes, she does. The sheer number of medical books, medical transcripts, hands-on medicine stuff that she has done since she became a PA, I think that more than qualifies. If there's ever a medical question that I have, I go to her, hands down, first resource every time. If she doesn't know, which is rare, I feel like, then I probably head on over to my second bullet point, which is deployed medicine.
Also not a book.
Also not a book, but is basically a book.
You could literally say the TC3 guidelines for the current year, and that would count. But you didn't.
I did.
You said two things that were not a book.
And?
What he means to say is the TC3 guidelines, the current TC3 guidelines, is a great resource for just general emergency medicine type stuff. I'm going to tell you about Where There Is No Doctor, which is literally a book about medical stuff that you can do when there's not a doctor, when it's just you. Which would suck because medical things get very involved very fast. No, that is a great book, though. Who's to buy it? Let me find it.
We really need to to start up that Amazon thing.
We really do. Where There's No Doctor, Village Healthcare Handbook, David Werner with Carol Thuman and Jane Maxwell. It is so much. I don't really know where to start on it. I don't know. Ways to tell whether a home remedy works or not. The most dangerous misuse of medicine. Obstructed gut. Dehydration. Skin problems. Night blindness. Care of baby at birth. Different deformities, different medicines, nutritional information, assessments, like everything. Everything that you could want in there outside of like NIH handbook or like an actual like diagnostic criteria handbook for, you know, whatever specialty you're in. It is a great, great resource there. Other things, the Ranger Medic Handbook, the, you know, so like if you go to a BLS class, the basic life support training manual, the book manual that they give you as you're taking the test and learning about all of that. So that gives you, you know, like your BLS, all the information there that's up to date, just so many little things that you can do. But for emergency medicine, definitely the TC3 handbook. Deployed medicine has TC3. It has prolonged field care. It has, I think it has like K9 field care. So, you know, I gave you crap for it, but that is a really great resource for finding great resources. And then not medical, but I was just thinking back to like the homesteading stuff. There's you turned me on to ammo and ballistics, small arms.
Yes.
Gunsmithing, you know, books. There's just so much that you can collect there that once again isn't going away, because the machine's a machine and it's not going to change unless you're changing platforms. At the end of the day, if you understand the basics, you can do a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah. But you can also do a whole heck of a lot of damage. So it's really important that if you're going to learn to do something, learn to do it well and do it right. Because the most dangerous person is the one who knows just enough to get in trouble.
The technically competent person that still needs, you know, a babysitter. Mm-hmm. Yep. Is that what you're talking about?
Yep.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing with all this. So these are all great resources. These are all great things that you probably should read and should be familiar with. However, if you're not putting these things into practice, then this doesn't help you. If the people that you're recommending this to aren't putting these things into practice, it's not helping you.
No. You can have all the knowledge in the entire world. If you don't know how to use it, then what do you really have? You have a paperweight for a head, essentially.
Right. Yeah, anything else, man?
No, I'm disappointed that I didn't think to go through the garage and find all my books, but then again,
like a week.
This would have been a much longer episode if I would have done that.
Yeah. And who needs that? So,
who needs that? Be thankful, listeners.
Guys, that's all we have for you today. We're the Hard Time Showman podcast. Bring you our book club recommendations, our personal libraries. Hope you can flesh out your knowledge base and, you know, that of you and your community. But check us out on Spotify, on YouTube, on Patreon, Discord, where else, anywhere you listen to podcasts, really. But The Discord is having great conversations still. The Patreon is where you'll get all of our extra content outside of just our public episodes. So our pre-shows, our post-shows, our show notes there for, you know, the public, any images or other resources for our episodes, that is where all that lives. So until next time, guys, we are the Hard Time Strongman Podcast. Cheering up a bear class man. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. Check out our Discord, where we talk about all of the topics that we talk about in our conversations, but in deep dive format. We have a lot of members on there of varying skill sets, of varying proficiencies, all talking about all these topics, sharing their experiences. So join today and help us expand our knowledge base.
And check out our Patreon. Our Patreon, outside of just backing up all of our episodes for when we eventually get canceled, our patrons get access to our exclusive episodes, our pre-shows, our post-shows, our little tidbits here and there that we aren't really supposed to talk about. We're also opening up all of these exclusive episodes for people to individually purchase. So you don't have to get tied into a tier in order to get all that content. You can dip your toes in a little bit, decide you like it, then come and join us on that. We're having exclusive conversations. And along with the Discord, we are just building that community, building that skill set, that mastery, these proficiencies. And this, outside of our sponsor, is what's keeping the lights on and keeping all of this information, all these classes rolling for you guys. So make sure to check out our Patreon. And one last thing, guys, the world is better with you in it. If you're feeling suicidal or if you're in crisis, dial 988 or reach out at 988lifeline.org to get help. Someone's always on the line. So if you need a lifeline, remember 988. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.